the value of investments and the income from them may go down as well as up, and investors may not get back the amounts originally invested. Past performance is not a guide to future performance. The information is not an offer, solicitation, or recommendation of any funds, services, or products, or to adopt any investment strategy.
Good day, everyone, and welcome to the U.S. Lens. I'm Ron Insana, Senior Advisor to Schroders North America. If you haven't noticed by now, one of the most hot topics in investing today is ESG, or impact investing, or sustainable investing, all the different words associated with the type of investing that not only does well, but also does good. Are there big differences in areas around the world in the way in which this is approached? Joining me now to discuss that and more is David Knutson. He is head of U.S. Fixed Income Product Management at Schroders. David, good to have you back. Thanks for being with us today.
Thank you very much, Ron. Happy to be here.
Let's start first with the difference, I should say, between sustainable and impact investing in the U.S. and Europe. Obviously, Europe, at least from a philosophical perspective, has been ahead of the U.S. in this regard, and certainly to an extent in a practical perspective as well. Is that still true? And what are the various differences between the two continents?
Yeah, so Europe has a head start on the U.S. in terms of ESG and sustainable and impact investing, but they're still coming up the learning curve as well. Right now, the European regulation is evolving quickly. The current regulation for sustainable and impact investing is governed by what's called the Sustainable Finance Disclosure Regulation, kind of a mouthful. It goes by SFDR. And essentially, they have rules around disclosure that if you call a fund a sustainable fund, you have to have sustainable characteristics. If you call a fund impact, you actually have to have the focus of the fund be social or environmental change. And it's a little nuanced. Some countries within Europe have additional requirements, but it's very different from the U.S.
And in fact, in the U.S., there really are no fundamental requirements. In fact, we continue to hear allegations among investment managers of so-called greenwashing, where they may call a fund sustainable or ESG focus or impact focus, and may not really be built for that. Is that one of the big differences between the two?
Yeah, because there's no common standard definition of what is sustainable or what is impact, fund managers, I think, are concerned that they're opening themselves up to accusations of greenwashing. Different companies have taken different fund managers have taken different paths in how to create or construct. The problem is we still have this ongoing debate in Washington on how to deal with this. You have the Department of Labor involved, you have the SEC involved. But what I see is a slow tide change. And I see, a focus effort, particularly by the SEC, and to come up with a framework so we can get on with the process of incorporating ESG assessments into our investment policies.
You know, I know I've belabored this point in prior conversations, both with you and other members of the team, about in the old days when folks were focused on impact or socially responsible investing, as it was once called, you didn't get the same results. And in fact, you probably underperformed. And there was an argument that you said, well, go ahead and buy alcohol, tobacco, and firearm stocks. And once you make a lot of money, just give it away to charity or give it away to your causes. That mindset hasn't fully gone away, because there's some concern that as a fiduciary, we're still not seeing the type of outperformance from ESG, at least in some cases, that many would hope as part of their investment process.
Yeah, I think that is exactly the main question that regulators, asset owners, and asset managers are trying to figure out is sustainable or impact investing a cost or benefit to its investors? The problem is we don't have standard definitions, and we also don't have enough data. We don't have a record to analyze. The nuance in the credit markets also make it difficult, because if you have a 30-year bond, your outcome is maybe more or less impacted by an ESG factor compared to a fundamental factor versus a bond that matures in a year. So time frame is one of those things about the credit markets that is distinctive and has to be taken into account when you're looking at performance.
So now when you're doing the research on this type of work, there's fundamental research that we do on companies and have historically done on companies to determine how much they're going to earn, what their revenues are going to be, what their growth rates are, their average viewers, their average users, their daily active users, all these different metrics that have come into play versus the type of integrated research that you talk about when discussing ESG. How do those coexist comfortably?
So I think there's some things in common. The bottom line is you're trying to understand what disruption will lead to a future price differential than the current price. But when you look at integrated investing or you look at ESG assessments or basically adding on to the traditional fundamental research that you talked about, what you're doing today is you're replacing anecdote with data, lots and lots of data. This is something that has only become accessible with recent improvements in our ability to ingest and understand data. So that's number one, anecdote is replaced with data. Number two, you have to tailor materiality to industries and markets. It's just not right to compare a chemical company to a bank, a pharmaceutical company to a mining company. You have to make sure that your developed markets are compared to, or developed market companies are compared to developed markets and emerging and so on. The last thing is really engagement. Fundamental research also engaged. So this isn't anything new, but engagement from when you're looking at an ESG perspective, I think is much more meaningful. You're talking about what I consider pre-financial costs and benefits, or in the ESG parlance, it's the externalities. What's not really appearing on the balance sheet or income statement today, but if things, if you roll forward in time, you would expect that to accrue to the providers of capital. The one thing that I think is key when understanding integrated investing is integrated investment does not make any moral or ethical judgments. We're not here to decide what's best for the asset owner or what we should buy, we shouldn't buy. We are simply trying to find the best risk-adjusted returns.
All right. So are you saying then that integrated investing is different than ESG investing as we describe it today?
No, integrated is essentially taking the traditional fundamental research and investing that we've done since Graham and adding another lens, adding another, what I would consider a longer term perspective. Fundamentals kind of tend to evolve over quarters, or ESG factors, you know, good management or treating your employees well or your customers well, or a diverse and creative board. Those things don't play out over quarters. They tend to take years. And so by including ESG or integrating ESG with fundamentals, you extend your investment horizon.
All right. Now, have you determined whether or not, and you touched on this just a few minutes ago, whether or not sustainable or impact investing is a benefit or a cost, or is it both for that matter?
You know, when you define benefit or cost, the classic definition is alpha. Have you added alpha, or has it cost you alpha? ESG, or when you talk about sustainable or an impact investing, and as I talked about earlier, I think impact has a higher threshold than sustainable. Sustainable is incorporating and trying to do well to the environment, to the climate, to social standards. Impact is you're going to do well. You're reducing your investable universe, and classic finance says that if you reduce your investable universe, you reduce your potential returns. However, you know, you do have some technical tailwinds. You have ESG investing or integrated investing or taking into account sustainable factors is got a huge tailwind. You're seeing flows increase substantially. So those companies that, or sectors or industries that are not favored by ESG analysis or assessments may stay cheap for a very long time. You also, I think this is key, as the, you know, as a credit investor, it is really all about downside management. At the best of times, you get a modest risk premium and you get your money back when your bond matures. And so downside protection, ESG affords another perspective to manage the downside risk in credit investing.
on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts. You're listening to the Investor Download.
Yeah, let me ask you to take a deeper dive on that, because we talk mostly about this, really, at least in the, you know, popular financial press, with respect to equity investing, not so much debt investing. So, tell us what the differences are and how that downside protection materializes in the credit space.
Yeah, so, you know, equity investors have the proxy vote, so they can impact or they can guide board decisions. Credit investors don't. Credit investors can raise and lower the cost of capital or the weighted average cost of capital. That it doesn't sound very important, but when you think about the amount of debt capital on the average corporate balance sheet, it is meaningful. But I think there's also something that's underappreciated by the market, and that is equity investors usually have a few bites at the apple when the management team or when a company wants to bring equity to the market, the initial public offering. When you think about credit markets, these initial public offerings or public offerings occur all the time. The duration of debt is significantly less than equity. And if you think about a company that has, let's just say, commercial paper, that company has to continually access the market every few months. That management team has to engage with investors, discuss their future, discuss the pain or pressure points. And the credit markets, sometimes, particularly the commercial paper, the short-term credit markets, isn't a question of return on capital. It's a question of return on capital, it's a return of capital, which essentially means the price variation is more narrow. The market shuts off. It isn't like if you see a very cheap short-term investment, you're going to go into it. Most people will simply avoid it. And that means that the credit markets can simply shut off, and that increases the cost of capital significantly and can materially impact margins, profitability, and management compensation.
Have we seen many examples of that? And I'm going to name a company, not as an investment, but you know, with respect to the likes of BP and the Deepwater Horizon debacle that occurred several years ago. And you could go much farther back into history when you talk about corporate events that caused great environmental or social damage. Is there a way in which this plays out that adversely affects a company in the here and now?
Yeah, there are companies, and you're seeing this more and more in those industries that have high external costs. You talked about energy. Energy is one of those industries and sectors that is the ESG looks at it and says, you know what, you're not fully accounting for all of the external costs that you're putting on to because of your product or your service. And there are other companies too, especially after a controversy, there is a pullback and an assessment. One of the most, I think, challenging things for the future of ESG and integrated investing is what I call transitional finance. It's easy to exclude things, and people have been excluding, you know, right, industries and issuers for decades. But how do you engage a company? And I think that is one of the keys to successful ESG investing. If you find a company that has had a controversy, or if you find a company within an industry that is criticized from a sustainable perspective, I think it's very important to identify the best in class in that industry, identify a company that has the will and the skill to transition to reduce these external costs, and to be a partner by providing capital. That, for me, I think is absolutely key, which is why I don't favor the exclusion. I favor best-in-class investing.
All right, now, how do the rating agencies affect this process? Debt investors have often turned to some of the big rating agencies to determine really the credit worthiness of the borrower. Are there ESG rating agencies that help investors also determine those other factors that you described when it comes to whether it's, you know, short-term commercial paper or longer-term debt?
Yeah, so you have the what they call the NRSROs, the nationally statistically recognized official rating agencies, and the big three, Moody's, S&P, and Fitch. You also have, I would call, the big three ESG rating agencies, Sustainalytics, MSCI, and Thomson Reuters. And trust me, there are many more rating agencies on both the fundamental and ESG side. But a couple key differences between the two, I think, are important to bring out. One, on the credit side, the traditional credit side, the Moody's, S&P, those rating agencies, generally speaking, their view of the fundamentals is consistent. So they, if one agency sees a high triple B company, the other agency sees a high triple B, or maybe a low signal A, they might have a notch difference from time to time, but generally they see the same thing. Within the ESG rating agencies, you have a lot more dispersion. And the problem comes from materiality. What is more meaningful? And that's what it's absolutely essential to do your own homework when it comes to not only the fundamental investing, but when it comes to ESG assessments, because one man's materiality is another man's or another perspective. It's immaterial. It's good information. They both rely on historical data, and the investment content or the investment value is not as meaningful as some would consider, but identifying materiality is absolutely key when it comes to looking at the data from the ESG rating agencies.
My final question, the most important things to consider when you're dealing with integrated research and investing.
I think it goes back to the top three. It is anecdote is replaced with data, lots of data, no more conjecture, no more gut feeling, no more bias, reducing that through data. Secondly, materiality has to be tailored to industries and markets. The third would be engagement. You engage on these topics. You have opportunities, more frequent opportunities than, for example, the equity markets. And then I guess lastly, just like fundamental research, no moral or ethical judgments. If you are an integrated research and investment process, you simply are trying to find the best risk opportunities. If your client wants to have a sustainable perspective, that's great. You can work with the client or an impact. But those are the top ones, I would say.
All right. David, always a pleasure. Thanks for joining us today. Really appreciate your time.
Thank you very much, Ron.
All right. David Knudsen is head of U.S. Fixed Income Product Management at Schroders, joining us to talk about impact investing, sustainable investing, ESG, and the like. I'm Ron Insana. Thanks for joining us on today's edition of U.S. Lens.
Well, that was the show. We very much hope you enjoyed it. If you want to find out more, check out our website, schroders.com/theinvestor download. You can also get in contact with us about anything in the show or ideas for future shows at schroderspodcast@schroders.com. Please remember to subscribe to us at Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Google, or wherever you get your podcasts. And don't forget to leave a review. We're now doing one show a week, which will be available every Thursday from 5 p.m. UK time. Thanks very much for listening, but above all, keep safe and go well. Cheers.